Lucifer.com presents The Starlight Megaphone. In this week's episode, Silicon Noob pairs with Mistwalker for a new game. And I write the theme tune and steal the theme tune. Hello and welcome to the Starlight Megaphone, episode 365 for the first day of March 2016. This is it, a year of podcasts, except for this year because it's a leap year. So we'll need one more for leap years. My name is Lucifer. With me today I have Silicon Noob.
G'day!
Write the theme tune, sing the theme tune. That's what Silicon Noob does here. We've got so much to do today. First, we'll begin with the Dice Admiral Cricket Deluge, just for Dice Admiral, because we know how much he loves cricket. We want to make sure that we fulfill his desires for all the latest cricket news from around the world. So, this...
Raiders, if you enjoy the cricket news, make sure you thank Dice Admiral.
Personally thank him for all the cricket news, because it's really down to him. It's all for Dice Admiral. So here's the deal. The T20 series between England and South Africa has concluded with England being demolished by South Africa in their final game. It was really a calamitous performance when 7 wickets fell for 14 runs, leaving England very undercooked indeed. South Africa romped home in just 13 overs. So that was it. That ended the series. And at that point, they had lost 5 short form games in a row, 3 ODIs and then both T20s in South Africa. That said, there is reason for hope. They did win the first 2 ODIs. They were playing against South Africa in South Africa, so these are all to be considered. And they have some promising young players. So the World T20, beginning in less than 2 weeks, should be an interesting event. It begins the 8th of March and runs till the 3rd of April, so we will be reporting on the ICC World 2020 throughout the month of March, with hope that England will win it, and they won't, or that Australia will win it, and they might. But probably India will win it. Because India in India are difficult to beat at the short form of the game, especially at T20.
Yep. It's their bread and butter.
It's their national pastime, T20, so they're the favorites, easy on, I should think. Okay, well, we have some other details here that we'd like to pass on to our readership, re the cricket. Remember that you can follow all T20 games in the World T20 on the BBC. We recommend that. And we'd also like to plug a free VPN that I use. I have their paid service, but if you only want to listen to one game or two games, or even like 6 or 7 games, their free service is probably more than enough. You get a gig a month, which is more than enough for just using audio. It's called Tunnel Bear, and they're really good. I've been using them for a couple years now, and I've found their service to be very easy to use and exceptional in its quality. So there you go. Much better than the old free VPNs I was using before, which were really slow and awful. Tunnel Bear is pretty quick, so it works over.
What's that again?
Tunnel Bear, all one word.
Tunnel bear.
Yep, as in like rawr bear. So yeah, Tunnel Bear, and they're really good. I think they're based out of Europe somewhere, but they have a very clean, easy to use interface. It's designed for iOS and Mac OS, and it works beautifully. So you put it on your phone, and you know you can listen to the cricket on the BBC as if you were a citizen of the United Kingdom, and you can put it on your computer and do the same. I just use it on my phone because you know. It's radio, right? So I put it on my phone and just set it anywhere. It doesn't need to be on my computer on the big speakers. And it works great. I really do like it. And like I said, you get a gig a month. So all you got to do is tweet them and you get an extra 500 meg too. So it all adds up. And you can, like, I don't even need their paid service, honestly. I had their free data is enough. But I like their service and I'm really appreciative. So I try to support them by buying the full thing. So they're a good company and they've been really great over the years to me. So I want to pass the word on to our listeners. If you're looking for a good VPN, I like them very much. Okay.
I'm just downloading it now.
There you go. Look at that. So easy to set up. They have a really cool, very pretty interface too. There's also that if you're aesthetically minded. Okay, so there's cricket coming. There's cricket in the offing. We're all going to be able to listen to the cricket. Hopefully you listeners will pick your side, pick a team, champion them through. Are you gonna cross your fingers for Hong Kong to win? Or are you going to pick one of these?
Hong Kong.
Don't laugh.
Bunch of bigger and better things. Oh, that could be the next island. Who knows?
Yeah, it could be. It's happened before. In T20, sometimes anything can happen. If one of the big teams goes out and has a bad day and gets whipped by Bangladesh or, heaven forfend, the Netherlands, then anything can happen. Not that any team that I can think of, any particularly large team, has ever been beaten by both Bangladesh and the Netherlands in a World T20. Seems impossible to imagine that a team would be that awful. All right. So ending the cricket news, we now need to look at video games. Not a whole lot of anime news this week. We'll talk some about that in our entertainment moment. Silicon Noob has an anime he'll want to recommend. But we got to get to the video game news. There's been quite a lot of it this week. Silicon Noob's news post this week covers some of the big stories. Of course, fallout from the Fire Emblem Fates localization, which continues as it is discovered that one of the Treehouse localizers is a supporter of child pornography and pedophilia. Well, not pedophilia, but like lusty, like practically a NAMBLA member,
well,
let's put it that
no,
way.
No, they are a supporter of, well, not maybe not the act, but the type of people that perform the act.
Let's say they passive are pedophilia rather than active pedophilia.
They're pedophile advocates, I think.
Yes.
Probably be a fair thing.
There's a lot of them in these social justice warriors. Have you noticed that? They're all in it together.
Well, I mean, that's the ultimate oppressed group, right?
Yeah, well, that you must know, be what it is.
The group that society shuns for a good reason.
What next? Are murderers our friends? We should let them out? They're just misunderstood. They should be allowed to murder. It's their life. That's a life choice. What next? These people, their brains are inside, backwards, sideways, and upside down. Okay.
One of the things I want to recommend to any listener is in my news post, I have a link to an article, like an academic article that this woman's written. And I would... If anyone's interested in studying sophistry, I would recommend that anyone just click on that and have a read of her article, which is quite interesting, I would say. I've read through the whole thing, and I've never read so much bullshit in all my life. You know, to the extent that she's saying things like, there's no correlation between people consuming child pornography and sexual victimization of children. I mean, well, how do they get the child pornography?
Well, absolutely. Where does it come from? Where does it come from? From fantasy land? No, it comes from actual children who are exploited and abused. That's where it comes from. That's why child pornography is illegal. Because if you stop the people consuming it, then the distributors have nowhere to sell it, right? And then presumably they'll stop. That's the hope, at least. In any case, moving on. I do think it's odd. I do think it's just odd. It's a strange thing that they're all in. They're all like child pornography supporters together. I just think that, that's been going on since last year when we found about Butts and, you know, her name? Brianna Wu. They're all in it together. It's very strange. Okay. There you go. But in any case, let us move on to something less personality centric and more substantial, which is a great news story this week. I'm very pleased and excited about this, which is that Mistwalker and Silicon Studios are in some sort of an agreement. Yes?
Yes. So just a couple of months back, Mistwalker did announce that they were working on a console game and that they were working on an original console game. Although sometime before that, they said that they were going to work at bringing... What was their iOS game?
I don't even remember. Was it Terra Battle?
Yeah, Terra Battle.
Terra Battle.
They did say that they were going to bring that to console, but then later on they said that they were working on something completely new. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is something completely new. They announced that they were working on it. But this week they've come out and said that they are working with Silicon Studios, who do Bravely Default, and they did, I think, 3D Dot Game Heroes and a bunch of other stuff. And I also know that I think they develop a whole bunch of, like, developmental middleware and stuff. So they're like a pretty sort of a pretty decent studio. So anyway, they've come out and said that they're working together on a project. I don't think they've really announced much else. I guess we just hope that it's another good sort of Lost Odyssey style title. I hope it's like a fully fledged RPG opposed to like RPG Lite, which was last was it Last Guardian or Last... God, my memory is failing me.
Behold the ravages of age.
But yeah, I mean, the last story was decent, but it wasn't a Lost Odyssey. And I'm hoping that together these two... And the
fiddly motion controls were not my favorite thing in the world. And the camera. Oh, the camera. Oh, that game. The camera in that game is infuriating.
I would love for them to come out and announce that they're making this for PS4 or possibly PS4 and PS Vita.
Oh, I hope so.
And
it's going to be for 3DS, It's going to be for 3DS. It's got possibly. It's got to be a 3DS. I mean, I'm willing to put all my chips in that pile. This is a 3DS game. Silicon Studio is making it. Mistwalker is making it. They're going to want to make it. It's going to be something like Bravely Default. It won't be Bravely Default, but it will be a traditional JRPG in that vein. And as such, it's going to be a 3DS game. It's just, they're not going to make a Wii U game because the market is too small. And I don't think that they're going to make something as large as a PS4 title. Because this is a Mistwalker thing, right? Mistwalker's doing it. Silicon Studios is going to be the producer of it. Mistwalker's going to develop it. So, it's not big enough, that partnership, to be a PS4, to necessitate a PS4 game. So what does that leave? Well, it's not Xbone.
Well, I don't think Mistwalker's actually developing it. I think they're doing like all the concept work. Like they specifically mentioned that they're getting like they're teaming up with Silicon Studios, so Silicon can do like programming and stuff.
Okay.
So I just don't
think there's not enough money there for a PS4 title. I just don't think there is.
Well, what I think is the most logical route is that it's going to be first and foremost a PS Vita title, and there's going to be like a PS4 port that's going to run a lot better.
I could imagine a Vita title, but I have trouble imagining a new Vita title starting development at this point. That's all. My guess is 3DS because it's small. They can have it out this year, and then it works.
It could be a Nintendo NX title.
There is that. That is, I could buy that, actually. If it's not coming out this year, I can believe it as an NX title. I would buy that. Absolutely. The reason I have trouble imagining it as a PS4 title is that Mistwalker has historically not done large-scale titles unless they've been supported monetarily by large-scale funding. So, like, when they did Lost Odyssey and Blue Dragon for Microsoft, they were rewarded handsomely with large sums of money for the exclusive rights to those games, and that's the only way those very large games got made. And I just don't think that kind of money is floating around at this particular moment on this particular project. Though I wish it did. I wish Sony would come along and just throw a big bag of money at them and say, "Here, make a Lost Odyssey style game for PS4."
Make Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Make Final Fantasy the way it used to be.
Exactly. Now, if I were in charge of Sony, I would do exactly that. I'd be like, here's a large bag of dollar bills. Now go make this kind of game and, let us know when you're done and we will pimp it to the roof and you will be successful and Square Enix will not and everyone will be happy. So there you go. All right. Well, let's move on from Silicon Studios and Miss Walker, though we'll be keeping our eye on that for you, dear listener, dear reader, because we're interested in this very much. I want to see. I know that whatever they make, it will be good. I just hope it's not an iOS title, because that would make me sad.
Well, specifically, like, I think it was only 2 months ago, they came out with like, the same piece of concept art that was on the story, and they said that they were working on a console title.
Okay.
Now, at a pinch, a console title can be sort of applied to, like, a handheld console, I guess.
Yeah.
Especially if, like, you're talking Japanese developers, so it's entirely...
We would hope it doesn't mean iOS, so, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you can really apply the word console to iOS.
Well, those Apple TV things now, that's the deal. They're trying to do that, trying to move into that area.
I'm sure that they weren't talking about the Apple TV.
I hope not. That would be a dim turn if people start calling Apple TV a console. Let's move on to perhaps my favorite story of the week, which is that Alan Wake's return has been trademarked, because I was a huge fan of the original Alan Wake, and now they've trademarked Alan Wake's return, which is no doubt going to become my game of the year, perhaps century even. There you go.
I enjoyed Alan Wake well enough, and so I'd welcome any return of Alan Wake, but as soon as I saw it, it was like, this is going to be a Kickstarter, isn't it?
Yep, you know it's going to
I'm almost certain it's going to be a Kickstarter.
Everything's a Kickstarter nowadays. This is definitely a Kickstarter.
It's sort of like, it's more of like that sort of cultish game where like it's got a substantial but smallish size of like really rabid fans as opposed to like mass market appeal. So I reckon they're going to try to tap into that.
That is what they generally do. And I would like it if this were not the way the industry is, but this is the way the industry is now. And so we just have to suck it up and muddle through it until the industry comes to its senses or collapses. And then we can have a rebirth. I would really like to have that collapse. My pocketbook would thank me, right? I mean, think about that. Not having to buy video games for about 4 years. That would be fantastic. But I think it's too big. It's too big to collapse now. It's like the movie industry. There's a lot of money floating around. And, you know, the movie industry can have bad years, but it's never going to collapse. It's not like it's going to just boil off into the ether. And that's kind of what needs to happen here. Even if the movie industry put out nothing but shit movies all year long, which is what they do, it wouldn't collapse. Because people get used to eating shit after a while. That's the thing with video games. They're mass market now. In the early 80s, they weren't. They were niche market. And so if you produce a bunch of shit, you know, your niche market's just going to turn their back on you. And that's what happened. And video games, you know, collapsed. And then only came back by convincing people that, look, we can actually make decent games on decent hardware and worth playing. Well, now there's so many people in the gaming market that you can produce shit every day of the week and people will still buy it. Some people, Julian, have been raised entirely on a diet of shit. And can no longer tell the difference between a game and shit. Indeed, shit is games.
It's a human centipede market.
Mm-hmm. Well, these people who dine exclusively on iOS titles, right, at $1 a piece, yeah. And then they hear about a PlayStation or a Wii, and they say, oh, $40, you can get a game like this on iOS. Well, no, you can't actually get that game on iOS, and the things you get on iOS are nothing like that. But you'll never know it because you won't pay $40 to play a proper game. So you will just assume that it's like an overpriced game rather than an actual game. You will never experience it. And you are the lowest form of, you know, the human species. And in Sean Cooper's America, we know exactly what to do with you, where to put you, and how to execute you. So
into the oven.
Into the ovens. Actually, I'm going to send them on a one-way trip to outer space. It's cheaper.
Oh, restart the space program.
Absolutely. That's my idea. Why waste these perfectly good human experiments? We can send them into space. I think that's much better. See, I'm very progressive. Do you see? I'm all about progress. Progressive. Let's move on now to this last story here, which is about NISA. NISA. NISA has announced the localization of not one, not two, but three games this week.
Yes, those games are Psycho Pass Mandatory Happiness, which is a visual novel. There's Tohu Genso Rondo, which is a PS4 game, actually. Previously on PC, fighting game with shoot-em-up elements. I wonder how that works. So, yeah, that's coming, I guess, summer of 2016. And then there is Yomawari Night Alone, which is a horror game. It's like an isometric horror game with, like, little cute, cheeky characters.
I think you mean Diagatilt.
Yeah, Diagatilt is what I meant.
Yes.
And that actually looked kind of nifty. The settings were very Japanesey, very detailed. They looked really cool. This is a Vita title. It's one that I'm very interested in. It's coming late 2016. Now, the interesting thing about Psycho Pass Mandatory Happiness is that it actually began life as an Xbox One exclusive for whatever reason. It was exclusive for Xbox in Japan. But, of course, it didn't sell more than, like, three copies over there because no one owns an Xbox One over in Japan. And so then it got like a sort of a PS4 and Vita port, and now those ports are coming over. They're being localized by NIS.
Excellent.
But the Xbox One version isn't. So
that's too bad.
The game that began life as an Xbox One exclusive is not getting any sort of Xbox release in the West.
I like that. There's a poetic justice to that. Mandatory Happiness. Are you sure this isn't an SJW simulator?
It might just be. Psycho Pass is very sort of dystopian.
Okay, so it is an SJW simulator, see?
It's like it's a dystopian utopia where, you know, it's supposed to be a utopia, but obviously there's things that are wrong with it. So all crime's supposed to be eliminated, but, you know, at the expense of some tremendous violations of human rights on, you know, an individual's rights. So I think it really is like a, like the setting of the game really is the sort of society social justice warrior would dream of, because people are, it's basically similar to Minority Report, where there's like a computer program that can sort of scan your temperament, your brain, and determine whether you have any like latent criminality.
Oh, jeez.
And then they'll just like, and then they'll just like incarcerate you before you've done anything.
Excellent.
So maybe, yeah, social justice heaven.
I mean, they would see that you'd be playing a video game with breasts in it, and they'd then arrest you for being a rapist. Preemptive strike. All right. Well, that's it for the video game news this week. We'll have more next week, of course. Now it's time for us to turn to the Immatonis Literature Corner. We are wrapping up rapidly part two of The Once and Future King here. We've got two readings left this week, and next week we'll see the end of The Queen and Aaron of Arid Darkness. So last week, what transpired? Well, last week we left poor Sir Gremor and his associate, the Paynim Sir Palamedes, on top of a cliff being pursued by the real questing beast. They, of course, were dressed up as a false one in an attempt to revivify King Pelennor's spirits, but it did not work. They weren't able to reach him in time because they were pursued by the real questing beast. So what transpired then as the Gaels gathered on the cliffs below to watch what the weird Englishmen were doing dressed up as a questing beast? Well, here's what happened. Chapter 10 of The Queen of Air and Darkness. In Bedegraine, it was the night before the battle. A number of bishops were blessing the armies on both sides, hearing confessions, and saying mass. Arthur's men were reverent about this, but King Lot's men were not, for such was the custom in all armies that were going to be defeated. The bishops assured both sides that they were certain to win, because God was with them. But King Arthur's men knew that they were outnumbered by 3-1, so they thought it was best to get shriven. King Lot's men, who also knew the odds, spent the night dancing, drinking, dicing, and telling each other dirty stories. But that is what the chronicles say, at any rate. In the King of England's tent, the last staff talk had been held, and Merlin had stayed behind to have a chat. He was looking worried. "What are you worried about, Merlin? Are we going to lose this battle after all?"
"No, you will win the battle, all right. There is no harm in telling you so. You will do your best and fight hard and call in you-know-whom at the right moment. It will be in your nature to win the battle, so it doesn't matter telling you. No, it's just something else which I ought to have told you that is worrying me just now."
"What was it about?"
"Gracious heavens, why should I be worrying if I could remember what it was about?"
"Was it about the maiden called Nimue?"
"No, no, 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 it's quite a different business. It was something I can't remember."
After a bit, Merlin took his beard out of his mouth and began counting on his fingers.
"I've told you about Guinevere, haven't I?"
"I don't believe it."
"No matter. And I have warned you about her and Lancelot."
"That warning," said the king, "would be a base one anyway, whether it was true or false."
"Then I have said the bit about Excalibur and how you must be careful of the sheath."
"Yes."
"I have told you about your father, so it can't be him. And I have given the hint about the person. What is confounding me,"
exclaimed the magician, pulling out his hair in tufts,
"is that I can't remember whether it is in the future or in the past."
"Never mind about it," said Arthur. "I don't like knowing the future anyway. I would much rather you didn't worry about it, because it only worries me."
"But it is something I must say. It is vital."
"Stop thinking about it," suggested the king, "and then perhaps it will come back. You ought to take a holiday. You've been bothering your head too much lately, with all these warnings and arranging about the battle."
"I will take a holiday," exclaimed Merlin, "as soon as this battle is over. I will go on a walking tour into Northumberland. I have a master called Bleas who lives in Northumberland, and perhaps he will be able to tell me what it is that I'm trying to remember. Then we could have some wild fowl watching. He's a great man for wild fowl."
"Good," said Arthur. "You take a long holiday. Then when you come back, we can think of something to prevent Nimue." The old man stopped fiddling with his fingers and looked sharply at the king.
"You are an innocent fellow, Arthur," he said, "and a good thing too, really."
"Why?"
"Do you remember anything about the magic you had when you were small?"
"No. Did I have some magic? I can remember that I was interested in birds and beasts. Indeed, that's why I still keep my menagerie at the tower. But I don't remember about magic."
People don't remember," said Merlin. "I suppose you wouldn't remember about the parables I used to tell you when I was trying to explain things."
"Of course I do. There was one about some rabbi or other, which you told me when I wanted to take Kay somewhere. I never could understand why the cow died."
"Well, I want to tell you another parable now."
"I shall love it."
"In the East, Perhaps in the same place when that Rabbi Jaconin came from, there was a certain man who was walking in the market of Damascus when he came face to face with death. He noticed an expression of surprise on the specter's horrid countenance, but they passed one another without speaking. The fellow was frightened and went to a wise man to ask what he should be doing. The wise man told him that death had probably come to Damascus to fetch him away next morning. The poor man was terrified at this and asked however he could escape. The only way they could think of between them was that the victim should ride all night to Aleppo, thus eluding the skull and bloody bones. So this man did ride to Aleppo. It was a terrible ride, which had never been done in the night before. And when he was there, he walked in the marketplace, congratulating himself on having escaped death. But just then, death came up to him and tapped him on the shoulder. "Excuse me," he said, "but I have come for you." "Why," exclaimed the terrified man, "I thought I met you in Damascus yesterday." "Exactly," said Death. "That was why I looked surprised, for I had been told to meet you today in Aleppo."
Arthur reflected on this gruesome chestnut for some time. Then he said, "So it's no good trying to escape Nimue."
"Even if I wanted to," said Merlin, "it would be no good. There is a thing about time and space, which the philosopher Einstein is going to find out. Some people call it destiny."
"But what I can't get over is this toad-in-the-hole business."
"Ah, well," said Merlin, "people will do a lot for love, and then the toad is not necessarily unhappy in its hole. Not more than when you are asleep, for instance. I shall do some considering until they let me out again."
"So they will let you out?"
"I will tell you something else, King, which may be a surprise for you. It will not happen for hundreds of years, but both of us are to come back. Do you know what's going to be written on your tombstone? Hic jacet Arthurus Rex, quandam rexque futurus. Do you remember your Latin? It means the once and future king."
"I am to come back as well as you?"
"Some say from the Vale of Avalon."
The king thought about it in silence. It was full night outside, and there was stillness in the bright pavilion. The sentries moving on the grass could not be heard. "I wonder," he said at last, "whether they will remember about our table." Merlin did not answer. His head was bowed on the white beard and his hands clasped between his knees. "What sort of people will they be, Merlin?" cried the young man's voice unhappily. Chapter 11. The Queen of Lothian had taken to her chamber, cutting off communication with her guests, and Pellinore broke his fast alone. Afterwards, he went for a walk along the beach, admiring the gulls who flew above him like white quill pens whose heads had been neatly dipped in ink. The old cormorants stood like crucifixes on the rocks, drying their wings. He was feeling sad, as usual, but he was also feeling uncomfortable, because he was missing something. He did not know what it was. He was missing Palamedes and Grummore, if he had been able to remember. Presently, he was attracted by shouting, and went to investigate.
"Here, Pellinore! Hi! We're over here!"
"Why, Grummore?"
he asked with interest.
"Whatever are you doing up that cliff?"
"Look at the beast, man! Look at the beast!"
"Oh, hello! You've got old Gladysant!"
"My dear chap, for heaven's sake, do something! We've been here all night!"
"But why are you dressed like that, Grummore? You've got spots or something. And what has Palamedes got on his head?"
"Don't stand there arguing, man!"
"But you have a sort of tail, Grummore. I can see it hanging down behind."
"Of course I have a tail! Can't you stop talking and do something? We've been in this damned crevice all night, and we're dripping with fatigue. Go on, Pellinore, kill that beast of yours at once!"
"Oh, I say, whatever should I want to kill her for?"
"Good gracious heavens, haven't you been trying to kill her for the last 18 years? Now come along, Pellinore. Be a good chap and do something. If you don't do something quick, we shall both tumble out."
"What I can't understand," said the king plaintively, "is why you should be in this cliff at all. Why you are dressed up like that. You look as if you were dressed as a sort of beast yourselves. And where did the beast come from anyway, what? I mean, the whole thing is so sudden."
"Pellinore, once and for all will you kill that beast?"
"Why?"
"Because it has chased us up this cliff."
"It is unusual for the beast," remarked the king. "She does not generally take an interest in people like this."
"Palamedes," said Sir Grummore hoarsely, "says he believes she has fallen in love with us."
"Fallen in love?"
"Well, you see, we are dressed up as a beast."
Likes,
explained Sir Palamedes faintly. King Pellinore began to laugh for the first time since he had arrived in Lothian.
"Well," he said, "bless my soul, did you ever hear of anything to match it? Why does Palamedes think she has fallen for him?"
"The beast," said Sir Grummore with dignity, "has been walking round and round the cliff all night. She has been rubbing herself against it and purring, and she sometimes curls her neck round the rocks and gazes up at us in a sort of way."
"What sort of way, Grummore?"
"My dear fellow, look at her now!"
The questing beast, who had not paid the least attention to the arrival of her master, was staring up at Sir Palamedes with her soul in her eyes. Her chin was pressed to the foot of the cliffs in a passion of devotion, and occasionally she gave her tail a wag. She moved it laterally on the surface of pebbles, where its numerous heraldic tufts and floations made a rustling noise, and sometimes she scratched the bluff with a small whimper. Then, feeling that she had been too froward, she would arch her graceful serpent neck and hide her head beneath her belly, peeping upwards from the corner of one eye.
"Well, Grummor, what do you want me to do?"
"We want to come down," said Sir Grummor.
"Well, I can see that," said the king. "It seems a sensible idea, mind you, but I don't exactly understand how the whole thing started, what? But I can see that, absolutely."
"Then kill it, Pellinor. Kill the wretched creature."
"Oh, really?" said the king. "I don't know about that. After all, what harm has she done? All the world loves a lover. I don't see why the poor beastie should be killed just because she has got the gentle passion. I mean to say, I'm in love myself, ain't I? What? It gives you a sort of fellow feeling." "King Pellinor," said Sir Palamedes definitely, "unless some steps are taken pretty damn quick, yours affectionately will be instantaneously martyred. R.I.P. "But my dear Palamedes, I can't possibly kill the old beast, don't you see? Because my sword is blunt."
"Then stun her with it, Pellinor. Give her a good bang on the head with it, man. And perhaps she will get concussion."
"That's all very well for you, Grummor, old fellow. But suppose it doesn't stun her? It might make her lose her temper, Grummor. And then where should I be? Personally, I can't see why you should want to have the creature assaulted at all. After all, she is in love with you, isn't she, what?"
"Whatever the reasons for the animal's behavior, the point is we are on this ledge."
"Then all you need to do is come off it."
"My good man, how can we come down to be attacked?"
"It will be only a loving sort of attack," the king pointed out reassuringly. "Sort of making advances. I don't suppose she'll do you any harm. All you would have to do would be to walk along in front of her until you've reached the castle, what? As a matter of fact, then you could perhaps encourage her a bit. After all, everybody likes to have their affection returned."
"Are you suggesting," asked Sir Grummor coldly, "that we should flirt with this reptile of yours?"
"It would certainly make it easier. I mean, the walk back."
"And how are we to do this, pray?"
"Well, Palamedes could twine his neck round hers occasionally, you know, and you could wag your tail. I suppose you could not lick her nose." "Yours truly," said Sir Palamedes feebly, finally, and with aversion, "can neither twine nor lick, and he is now about to fall. Adieu!"
With this, the unfortunate Paynim let go of the cliff with both hands, and appeared to be sinking into the monster's jaws, but that Sir Grummor caught him, and the remaining buttons held him in position.
"There," said Sir Grummor. "Now look what you've done."
"But my dear fellow."
"I'm not your dear fellow. You're simply abandoning us to destruction."
"Oh, I say."
"Yes, you are. Heartlessly."
The king scratched his head.
"I suppose," he said doubtfully, "I could hold her by the tail while you made a dash for it."
"Then do so. If you don't do something immediately, Palamedes will fall and we shall come in half."
"I still don't see," said the king sadly, "why you had to dress up like this to begin with. It's all mystery to me. However," he added, taking the beast by the tail, "come on, old girl, heave ho! We shall have to do the best we can in the circumstances. Now then, you two, run for your lives. Hurry up, Grummor. I don't think the beast is pleased by the feel of her." "Ah, you naughty thing. Leave it. Run, Grummor. Naughty beast. Pa. Nasty, nasty. Leave it. Quick, man. Quick, come away, then. Don't touch. Trust. She'll be off in a minute. Come to heel, will you? Heel. Come behind. Oh, you horrid beast. Faster, Grummor. Sit. Sit. Lie down, beast. How dare you? Look out, man. She's coming. Oh, you would you? There, now she's bitten me."
They won the drawbridge by a short head, and it was drawn up after them in the nick of time.
"Phew,"
said Sir Grummor, unbuttoning the back end and standing up to mop his brow.
"Hoots,"
cried various old wives who were in the castle delivering eggs. Some of the castle circle could speak English after a fashion, including St. Tortlebach and Mother Morlin.
"We sleek it, carring timorous beastie," said the drawbridge man. "Ah, oh, what a panic's in thy breastie."
"Aroint us,"
said the bartenders. Bystanders.
"Bonny Sir Palamedes,"
said a number of old ones who had known of their plight on the cliff ledge all night, without saying anything about it, as was their custom, for fear of being caught out,
"is going to lay him doon in dee."
They turned round to examine the Paynim, and found that it was as they said. Sir Palamedes had collapsed on a stone mounting block without troubling to take his head off, and was breathing heavily. They took it off for him, and threw a bucket of water in his face. Then they fanned him with their aprons.
Ah, the poor churl, they said compassionately. The Sassenach, the noble savage, will he not come back again? Give him another droppy there. Ah, the bra splash.
Sir Palamedes revived slowly, blowing bubbles out of his nose.
Where is yours truly? He asked. Here we are, old boy. We got back safe. It's outside.
Through the portcullis, there came a sorrowful howl to bear out Sir Gore's statement, as if it had been 30 couple of hounds baying the moon. Sir Palamedes shuddered.
We ought to look out to see if Sir King Pellinore is coming. Yes, allow one sec for recuperation.
The beast may have done him a mischief.
Poor fellow.
How do you feel yourself?
The indisposition is passing, said Sir Palamedes bravely.
Not much time to waste. It may be eating him at this very moment.
Lead on, said the Paynim, heaving himself to his feet. Forward to the battlements.
So the whole party set off to climb the narrow stairs of the Pale Tower. Below them, looking small and upside down from this height, the questing beast could be seen sitting in the ravine which bounded the castle on that side. She was sitting on a boulder in it, with her tail in the burn, and looking up at the drawbridge with her head on one side. Her tongue was hanging out. Nothing could be seen of Pellinore.
Evidently she has not eaten him, said Sir Grimoire.
Unless she has eaten him.
I hardly think she would have time to do that, old boy. Not in the time.
You would think she would have left some bones or something, or at any rate the armor.
Quite.
What do you think we ought to do?
It seems baffling.
Do you think we ought to make a sortie?
We could wait to see what happens, Palamedes, don't you think?
No leaps, assented Sir Palamedes, without previous looks.
After they had been watching for half an hour or so, the faction of the old ones grew bored with the lack of entertainment. They clattered off down the stairs to throw stones at the questing beast off the top of the wall. The two knights stayed on the lookout.
This is a pretty state of affairs.
Indeed it is.
I mean, when you work it out.
Exactly.
Here's the Queen of Orkney, angry about something on one side. I could not help that she seemed a little queer about that unicorn. And Pellinore moping on the other. And you were supposed to be in love with Labille Isoud, isn't it? And now this beast is after both of us.
A confusing situation.
Love, said Sir Grimoire uneasily, is a pretty strong passion when you come to think of it.
At this moment, as if to confirm Sir Grimoire's opinion, a pair of enlaced figures sauntered along the cliff road.
Good gracious! Exclaimed Sir Grimoire. What are these?
As they drew nearer, their identity became clear. One of them was King Pellinore, and he had his arm round the waist of a stout, middle-aged lady in a side-saddle skirt. She had a red, honey face, and carried a hunting crop in her free hand. Her hair was in the bun.
It must be the Queen of Flanders' daughter!
I say, you too!
Cried King Pellinore as soon as he had observed them.
I say, look here! What do you think? Can you guess? Whoever would have thought it, what? What do you think I found? Aha!
Cried the stout lady in a booming voice, archly tapping her cheek with the hunting crop.
But who did the finding, eh? Yes, yes, I know. It was not me that found her at all. It was she that found me. What do you think of that? And do you know what?
Went on the king in high delight.
None of my letters could possibly be answered. I never put an address on them. We hadn't got one. I always knew there was something wrong. So Piggy got on her horse, you know, and came hunting after me by moor and fell. The questing beast helped her a great deal. It has an excellent nose. And that magic barge of ours, can you imagine it? Must have had an idea or two in its head, for it went back to fetch them when it saw I was upset. How nice of it. They found it in a creek somewhere, and here they are. But why are we standing about?
Shouted the king. He was so excited that nobody else had time to talk.
I mean to say, why are we shouting? Is it polite, do you think? Want you two to come down and let us in? What's wrong with the drawbridge, anyway?
It's the beast, Pellinore, the beast. She's in the ravine.
What's wrong with the beast?
She's besieging the castle.
Oh, yes, said the king. Now I remember. She bit me. And what do you think?
He went on, waving one hand in the air to show that it was bandaged.
Piggy tied it up for me like 1 o'clock. She tied it up with a bit of, well, you know, petticoats.
Beamed the Queen of Flanders' daughter.
Yes, yes, her petticoats!
The king was convulsed with giggles.
That's all very well, Pellinore. That's all very well. But what are you going to do about the beast?
His Majesty was intoxicated with gaiety.
Ho, the beast!
He cried.
Is that the trouble? I'll soon settle her. Now then!
He exclaimed, marching to the edge of the ravine and waving his sword.
Now then, off you go! Shoo! Shoo!
The questing beast looked at him absently. She moved her tail in a vague gesture of recognition, then returned her attention to the gatehouse. The occasional stones which were being thrown at her by the old ones she dexterously caught and swallowed, in the maddening way which chickens have when you're trying to drive them off.
"Let down the drawbridge!" commanded the king. "I will attend to her. Shoo now! Shoo!"
The drawbridge was lowered with hesitation. The beast immediately drew closer to it with a hopeful expression.
Now then,
cried the king.
You rush in while I defend the rear.
The drawbridge reached the ground, and Piggy was speeding across before it touched. King Pellinore, less agile or more bemused by the gentle passion, collided with her in the gateway. The questing beast ran into them behind, knocking the king flat.
Beware! Beware!
Cried all the retainers, fishwives, falconers, farriers, fletchers, and other well-wishers who were assembled within. The Queen of Flanders' daughter turned like a tigress to defend her young.
Be off, you shameless hussy!
She cried, bringing her hunting crop down on the creature's nose. The questing beast recoiled, with the tears springing to its eyes, and the portcullis crashed behind them. In the evening, a new crisis began to develop. It became obvious that Glatisant intended to besiege the castle until her mate had been produced, and in these circumstances the old ones, who had brought their eggs to market, refused to leave the gate without an escort. Eventually, the three southern knights had to convoy them to the foot of the cliff with drawn swords in their hands. In the village street, St. Tortlebach was waiting to receive the convoy, a raffish Silenus supported by four small boys. His breath smelt strongly of whiskey, and he was in tearing spirits, waving his shillelagh.
Not a one more stories, he was shouting. I'm not going to be married with old Mother Morland and having a fight with Duncan this minute and never more to be a saint.
Congratulations,
the children told him for the 100th time.
We are all right also, added Gareth. We are allowed to serve at dinner every day.
Glory be to God, is it every day, begor?
Yes, and our mother takes us for walks.
Well, there now, prize youth and it will come.
The saint caught sight of the convoy and began to howl like an Iroquois.
Up the ribbles!
Be easy now, they told him. Be easy, your holiness. The swords are not for fighting with at all.
Why wouldn't they be?
He inquired indignantly, and he proceeded to kiss King Pellinore and breathe on him. The king said,
I say, are you really going to be married?
So am I. Are you excited? For answer, the holy man twined his arms around the king's neck and drew him into Mother Morland's shebeen, not entirely to Pellinore's satisfaction, for he would have liked to hurry back to Piggy, but it was obvious that a bachelor party would have to be held in celebration. The whole Gaelic miasma had faded like the mist it was, whether under the influence of love, or of whiskey, or of its own nature as a mist, and the three southerners found themselves accepted at last as individuals and guests, irrespective of the racial trauma, into the warm heart of the North. Chapter ends. And what will become of the quest and beast? That's what I want to know.
I love those characters. It's really strange with this book because, you know, parts of it are so serious and then you get these characters and they're just buffoons and they're wonderful.
They are. Everyone's kind of stupid. Everyone. Even Merlin is kind of stupid. Everyone's kind of stupid. But they're lovable. They're really lovable because their stupidity comes from innocence, not from ignorance. Mm. So, you know, you're like, you just want to hug everyone. And everyone's motivations are all right, with the sole exception of Morgause, who is horrendous. On so many levels, horrendous. There you go. All right, we will conclude the Queen of Erin Darkness next week. Now, Arthur has a battle to fight. Pellinore has a marriage to be held, along with St. Tortlebach. What about the quest and beast?
I hope she finds love.
How will Grummore and Palamedes get back to Grammarry? There's so much to be sorted. Will Merlin be able to remember what it was that he had to tell Arthur?
I'm sure it probably had something to do with Mordred.
Yeah, very probably, right? That seems likely. One thing he had to warn him about. He covered all the other points. Could it be?
Don't screw your sister.
Yeah, please don't have sex with Morgause. Please. All right. Well, thus it ends for the present. We'll conclude this book next week, and then it's on to book three, which is a story of Lancelot, of course, right? The ill-made knight. This is the story of Morgause and her sons. So the first story is the story of Arthur's youth. The second story is the story of Morgause and the four Orkney boys. The third story is the story of Lancelot and Guinevere. And, of course, the fourth story is the story of the death of Arthur. So we're cracking along to the end here. All right, it's time now for the Immatonis Entertainment Moment. It's that part of the podcast where we talk about the most exciting thing that happened in anime or video games this week. Silicon Noob.
Okay, so this week my entertainment moment was just earlier today I watched about 6 or 7 episodes of the 2015 series Blood Blockade Battlefront, and it is absolutely fantastic. Like the animation quality is just absolutely sumptuous. The premise of it is that it's set in New York City, and there's been some sort of, I guess, somehow an otherworldly sort of place has merged with New York City, and there's sort of the whole city is under the dome. It's sort of inaccessible. And so basically what you have is there's like a lot of establishing shots of like sort of famous New York locations, but there's like grafted onto that, there's like all these fantasy world elements. So it's that there's like it's visually it's very creative. That's probably the strongest element of this is its presentation and its visuals, and it just looks $1 million. It's also like a fun series too, though. The characters are fun, particularly the King of Depravity. He's a very camp villain, sort of played in the Grell Sutcliffe kind of style, but probably not as extreme as Grell. A little bit more serious than Grell, but still he has a lot of fun. Really hams it up.
It sounds exciting, and I'm going to try to look into it and get a chance to see some of it myself. So fingers crossed that I'll have some free time this week.
Yeah, and it has a dub as well, so you don't have to worry about reading it.
Excellent. That would make it easier. I can put it on while I'm working on grading papers.
So, oh, and it's got a really good soundtrack as well.
Oh, good.
Like lots of really fun songs. Sort of, like.
Let's see. My entertainment moment this week would probably be that I played quite a lot of Pokemon today. I've been looking forward to Pokemon coming out, and I played some of it today. And I'm a little disappointed they don't have an option to engage the Pokemon Color features, because of course, or the Game Boy Color features, because of course, anyone who played the classic Pokemon games should know that they had some Game Boy Color functionality, right? That would show the meters and stuff with green, yellow, and red hit points depending on how full they were, and so on and so forth. These are just the pure monochrome releases. I also want to make a brief comment about Mega Man Legacy Collection, which we discussed last week a little bit. We talked about how at $30, it's probably not a very good price. However, two things are worth considering. The digital release of Mega Man Legacy Collection on 3DS is only $15, which is a very compelling price. That's half the price that you would normally pay for just the six Mega Man games at $5 each. And the other thing is that some of the graphical glitches that are present in the PS4 version that are fastidiously, you know, reproduced are not reproduced in the 3DS version. So when you fire up, say, the Mega Man 3 game and you are on the loading, you're on the stage select screen, the graphic glitch on the stage select screen caused by sections of the screen panning off both to left and right simultaneously, that's not replicated on the 3DS game. So I have not played enough of it to tell you if it like flickers and glitches like the NES version does. And like the Virtual Console versions don't. Flickering glitches removed in those versions. But in any case, $15 for all six Mega Man games plus like the challenges and stuff seems to me a very good deal. So there you go. I can endorse that. I think $15 is a good price. So pick that up if you're a fan of Mega Man.
You know, I think with Pokemon, probably the reason that they released it as standard is because that's the version most people are used to. But I wonder if there's a way to just like hold in a button at startup to like switch between modes or something, because you know in a similar way to like when you're starting up DS games to make it like go full screen, you can hold in like a button or something.
Yeah.
I say that because Nintendo do that sometimes, and I wonder whether you can sort of hold in a button to like make it boot in Game Boy Color mode as opposed to just Game Boy mode.
So what you can do is you can hold select or just start when you boot the game, I guess. And that will load a game with its original Game Boy mode. And if you do it with Game Boy Color games, it will revert it to GBC mode. So let me check. Let me see if I can do that with the Pokemon. Oh, it's got the Game Boy Color. Does not have the Game Boy Color. It's just got the little Game Boy screen. So that brings it up in like... that brings up an original resolution, black and white. So that did not do what I thought it would do. Let's see what happens if I get in a battle. Testing it on the fly right here for our viewers. That's how serious we are about video games at Lucifer.com. Can't run in the original Pokemon. Nope, that is in black and white. Oh, I can make it black and I can turn it green, but it doesn't turn into color. There's no way to go. I can make it the green and black monochrome, green and gray. Or black and gray, but there's no color option, which is unfortunate because, like I said, if you put original Pokemon games into a Game Boy Color, they would have colored hit point bars and stuff. So in any case, it might have been something built into the hardware. Like the Super Nintendo, like the Super Nintendo's Super Game Boy, certain games would have color on that, right?
Yeah, and they'd even have like custom like backgrounds, like
little borders.
You know how? Yeah.
So it's apparently...
Nintendo is one big disappointment.
Well, apparently, what it is the color in the Pokemon games is written into the Super Game Boy information on the cartridge, and because they're played in the Game Boy in the Game Boy emulator on the 3DS. It ignores all of them. It says here, the Super Game Boy and the Super Game Boy 2 are the only systems that display Pokemon Red and Blue properly in color. The Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance both display the game exactly like the Game Boy Player, right? So the Game Boy Player, here's a rundown of the difference. The Game Boy Player ignores all the Super Game Boy Color information and shows a generic reddish everything with the main sprites in green. Using either the Super Game Boy or the Super Game Boy 2, each area has its own unique color scheme based on its respective name. So like Lavender Town is purple, right? Each Pokemon also has a semi-unique color scheme. Grass Pokemon are green, fire Pokemon are red, etc. With the Game Boy Player, they're all the same shade of red that the rest of the game uses. There you go. I remember playing it on my Super Game Boy and it was really cool seeing it in color. So it's disappointing, a little disappointing, because tell you what, if you look up the Super Game Boy 2 version of Pokemon, it's really cool looking. Like every town is a different color. Pokemon are different colors. So we don't get that, sadly. We get black and white, but that's probably how most people played it. If you played it on an original Game Boy, that's what you experienced. So there you go. Okay. So we tracked that down for people and answered a question for me, like why it was like that. Okay, well, now it's time for us to wrap up the podcast. We're at the end here. So if you've enjoyed this podcast and you've gotten some Pokemon-related information that you find useful, please go ahead and rate us 5 stars on iTunes. We appreciate that. You can also tell your friends about the site. That's super important. The most important thing you can do. And if you haven't done that, it's really important. It's really important to us that you tell people about the site. Comment on the threads. That's very helpful. If you like this podcast, why not leave us a comment saying so? And you can donate or donate. That's right. If you donate to the site $5 or more in the course of a year in a single donation, then you are entered into our end of the year game drawing for a $60 game on Amazon or Steam. Which reminds me, I don't think my provisioning thing came back, which means I need to look that up because we have a game winner that may not have gotten his game because it was on Steam. And I'm totally used to dealing with Amazon where I just push it through and it gets dealt with. And Steam, yeah. I think I have to do something there. I think I have to actually go in and manually give him his game. So I better make sure I did that. So if you didn't get your game, then let me check and make sure, and I'll try to take care of that this weekend. My apologies there. All right. Well, we are at the end of the podcast. All that remains now is for me to thank my panelists this week. It was the one, the only, Silicon Noob.
G'day.
G'day, Silicon Noob. I'm Lucifer, and this has been a Lucifer.com podcast. We'll be back next week with more cricket news just for Dice Admiral and everyone else as well. They'll get some anime and some video game news, but mostly cricket news from now on. We're going to try to transition to a cricket news-only podcast for the benefit of Dice Admiral, ultimately. Until next week, from all of us here at Lucifer.com, good night.
Good day.
Listening to the Starlight Megaphone, a weekly production of Lucifer.com. Copyright Lucifer.com. Music copyright Square Enix. All rights reserved.